The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Another nice-looking day. Hope everybody doing well on this hump day. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in hour number one of The Drive. Dan's adjusting equipment now. You got something. His mic looks like it's not quite being. Oh, the screen. Yeah, well, this one here flops down all the time, too, so just... Just be careful. But anyway, we're here on this Wednesday edition of The Drive. A lot going on. I mean, there's so many sports right now with basketball. Roster management is what's going on with basketball right now. Retention, addition. Trying to keep up with who you have, who you can get, and the portal open for another 6 days for players to enter. And guys, there's I got a couple of calls today. I've been out and about. We've been doing an awful lot of like yard prep type stuff at the house and plants and things like that. But I had a couple of calls while we were doing that. Is there some concern about all the players that say they're staying at Auburn?
Yeah, I think it's. And look, we've seen it. We've seen it in football.
You saw it last year with Chad.
Well, I mean,
Chad
we just saw it in football where a kid, I won't say a kid, where a man was in class at another place and left and went somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there is no guarantee unless this thing is over with.
Yeah.
Like, once you get to the end and there's
portal. By next Wednesday, correct. And the portal has closed, if a player hasn't entered,
yes.
Then you know that. They're not going anywhere.
You want to be able to take everyone at their word, especially when they mm-hmm. say they're coming back. The portal is open until
that's right.
Until it closes.
Even guaranteeing, hey, look, I'm coming back. I'm telling you, I'm coming mm-hmm. back. And then somebody says, hey, we're gonna double what they paid you. Okay, well
it's not unlike I guess the comparison in college sports would be when a coach signs an extension midway through a season. You think that's the coach?
He can still get fired.
You think that's the coach in the university sort of announcing, "Hey, we've agreed this guy's coming back." That coach can decide
in the
offseason.
Can go to another place.
That coach can listen to another offer after that. And realize.
I think
you'd want to be able to take everyone at their word, right?
There's a little recourse though if that doesn't.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Mm-hmm. It depends on have you signed a contract? Is it done? Will there be some? Buyout clause, whatever it is, I think right now you go, man, it sounds good, but you got to get to that date where it's over with. And mm-hmm. my question is, if a guy entered the portal and then says he's staying, does that mean he's not in the portal anymore, or was he still in the portal?
No, I think once they're in the portal, you're in the portal.
That's it, unless you remove your name
physically.
And I don't know that anybody's done that yet, so we'll see. But, I think there's always concern. I mean, there is no guarantee in this world until that thing closes and somebody's not in there.
And what I am talking about specifically, again, a couple of concerned people calling today and saying, what's up with Sebastian Williams Adams?
Yeah. No, that's the name heard a little bit of. And listen, all you can do is just continue to battle. And it's a battle, again, until that thing closes. And you mm-hmm. go, hey, your name's not in there anymore. That means you're coming back. It's unfortunate, but we see it in football. You have to recruit your own roster to the very end, even guys that say they're staying. The same thing is true in basketball. It's just the world we are. It's the world we live in, and it's why – look, I talked to somebody yesterday. They said it's why there are college football coaches at an alarming rate that are leaving to go to the NFL.
Yeah.
Because of this. It's because of this very thing, because you just don't – like, you can go, yeah, we're coming back. Well, tomorrow you coming back? I don't know. The next day you coming back? Well, maybe. Like, that would be exhausting to deal with.
Oh, and yeah, college football coaches going to the NFL and head coaches of smaller schools going to become assistants.
Well, no, and I think
Larger schools.
Yes.
Well, even if you think that, like, free movement after every season isn't the crisis that other people think it is, the thought that a player can, you know, would be in a position where they can agree with a school, come to terms.
Right.
And then decide a couple of days later, you know, act on second thought, actually, because here's the domino. And again, without knowing anything about the situation behind the scenes, but it's like you would think that Auburn had backup plans.
Oh yeah, Auburn probably moved on from some other possibilities when they felt assured that they had a certain player staying.
Again, without speaking to the validity of any rumors about Sebastian considering other things, but like. I mean, Auburn last year seemed to be in, like, look, maybe they would have gotten Kevin Overton even with Chad Baker Mazzara on the team, but they signed him a couple of hours after Chad left, right? And you got the feeling like, oh, okay, maybe Auburn had some, you know, they had some insurance. They had a backup plan in place. We'll see if any of the current Auburn players, you know, the three guys slated to return, we'll see if any of them decide.
Well, I mean, just think.
Change their minds.
Think about it. Listen, Chad Baker Mazzara says, no, I'm going elsewhere. You sign Keyshawn Hall. Then Chad Baker Mazzara says, no, I'm coming back. And you go, well, we can't spend that much money for the same position. Mm-hmm. You got to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that – look, it's the reality of the situation. You mentioned it. Whether it's the current roster you're dealing with, whether it's trying to keep guys having – Bill's right. Look, all right, we're here. We don't have the money for you. Move on. And a guy goes and takes two visits. He commits elsewhere. And all of a sudden you go, well, this guy's not staying anymore. Now you would have had money. Now you got to go find another guy.
Right.
And you got to get in on him who other schools have already been in on since this thing opened up.
Or there could be somebody you've sort of been slow playing a little bit. Then you have to get back in. And they're going, why didn't you love me there over the last couple of weeks?
Or like I said, or this other school loves me a lot.
Yep.
They've loved me longer.
Mm-hmm. Or you have money, but your top targets have picked new places.
That's my point.
Yeah.
And maybe you can lure them back. You know, and maybe you can lure them back into the portal because the portal's open.
Or you're going to have to sweeten it back up.
Yeah, man, it would really stink. Just think about it. It'd really stink if you went to the store to buy something. Okay, you bought it, you take it home, and it's like, no, somebody else has paid more for it. You got to take it back. It's going back.
That's
what it's sort of like.
Well, that's it. You bought a TV for $250, and you got, man, I got a deal. We got a $250 55-inch TV, and then Best Buy calls and says, hey, somebody just offered us $700. Take it out of the box.
That's
bring
right.
it back.
That would be tough. But yeah, I mean, apparently.
I guess you would have to urge your players to get out of the portal when they agree
correct.
To
that's it. Well,
come back.
And like, but even then, they got to sign a deal. Yeah. They got to do all that stuff.
And then the other thing is, Sebastian Williams-Adams isn't in the portal, and he didn't go in the portal. But, I mean, there's still time for him to do it. So, I mean, that's the thing.
Sure.
Even though he's agreed, it is really, really tough, this situation. And then, I mean, then there's also, you know, what's going on with Elijah Freeman.
Yeah.
Because he supposedly had a deal in place and was about to sign. And maybe that deal didn't go through. And now where is he? Can he come back? Does Auburn still have the money that they had for him in the first place? While they've been looking for other players in his same position,
yeah.
This is such a mess.
It is, and you think about it, like if you're them, you're going, okay, Elijah Freeman, you're looking to go, all right, what are the threes? And you look at the shooter from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and you're looking at all these guys going, okay, you still need two of them. You still don't need one of those guys no matter what. But if Elijah Freeman comes back, he's the guy that you're probably going to spend the most money on. How much do you have to spend on the second guy? As opposed to maybe sharing money with two guys at the same position.
Would he and another guy at less money be better than two guys that you might be able to get right now?
Correct.
That
and
same
do you have
money?
Enough money to do him and a lesser guy? Mm-hmm. Is that enough?
Dan, it sounds like we're doing our draft.
Yeah, and I've had someone ask, like, all right, so are there any like media reports about Sebastian? Like what's actually like being reported about Sebastian Williams Adams?
I know it's been mentioned.
On three wrote something about.
I know it's been mentioned
about the two of them.
All we've said was, listen, we've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's nothing where somebody's on. There's no record going. Hey, here it is. Mm. It's pretty much what. Hey, here's what you're hearing. Here's what we've heard. We'll see what happens. Is it legit? Is it going to happen today? I mean, like, you just don't know.
No.
And so that's the part. Now all you can – that's the part about this. All you can say is, listen, here's what we're hearing. That's it. There's nothing else to it.
There's some rumblings. You know, stay tuned. I mean –
because I think folks were more ready to hear, like, rumblings about players who aren't currently on Auburn's team.
Right.
That Auburn might be after. And there have been getting close to adding. And there have been rumors.
Yeah, there's been some of those. Yeah. I mean, whether you think about a guy that you've watched a bunch.
Thomas Dowd. Yeah.
Thomas Dowd. I mean, like, I think he's a really interesting guy. I really do. You know, not a 7-footer, but a guy that's really athletic, and I think he's a more polished version of Jovic. I don't know that he's maybe as strong, but you look at him and going, his rebounding prowess. I mean, you look up and that guy had – I went back and threw it. He probably had 8 or 9 double-doubles where he had 15, 16 rebounds at a time.
You know who his game reminds me of a little bit, actually, is Jalen Williams. Like, he plays
– Same thing.
Yeah,
he plays instinctive guy.
He's got some – and so it's like, I don't know. And he's – I mean, again, he's
6'8", 225.
Yeah, and a double-double, you know, average 10-plus rebounds. Yeah, I would think that depending on – if Sebastian Williams Adams is back, like I feel then like Sebastian and Thomas,
then it becomes a really good combination.
See, I think they could really play off each other well. And the stuff that I mean, Sebastian's numbers are more similar to Isaac's than I think people realize. And
no,
it's
no,
like,
it's very similar.
I'm not saying he's Isaac Okoro, but I do think, honestly, as an athlete,
I think he's a better offensive player than Isaac was as a freshman. I really do. I think he's more skilled than Isaac was. He's more of a power forward version than Isaac was, but he's a guy that would give you the option to play the 4 and the 3. And you go, Thomas Dowd's probably a true 4. You go get another true big to go with your 5, and then, listen, find another shooter. And there's plenty of options when you start to think about some of the guys out there. Nathan wrote a story today about a guard from Monmouth that's expected to visit. 11.3 points a game, 42% from 3, and 89% from the free throw line, a 6'3 guard, originally from South Carolina.
Yeah, that'd be good.
That would be a – you're talking about a compliment.
That sounds like a good fit for what Auburn needs.
That's a compliment, guy, when you think about what do you need? And you go, can you have somebody that can help you at the point and the 2? Kevin Overton can do both of those. And Tahad Pettiford would give you the option for him to play point and the 2. Having 3 legit options for 2 positions – it's probably what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I still want to break this down assuming Sebastian is in, right?
So it's that's all we can do.
Yeah, doing it that way, it's like.
And here's my thing, too. It may be happening behind closed doors, but it feels, I don't know, it feels like you're doing a disservice to talk about it a ton, because in my mind, it changes how you view somebody.
Oh, yeah, you're right about that. You're right.
And when it's reality, this situation, but automatically – it makes you think that, man, this guy don't really want to be here. It's all about the money. That might not be what this is about, but to me, it influences the public opinion of someone. So I thought Nathan's story on Tahad Pettiford this week was perfect, because it showed you, hey, look, we wanted to come back to Auburn. They showed us they wanted him. We had a place we could have gone for more money, but we wanted to stay. And so it's hard to get that story unless somebody's willing to go on the record and tell you exactly what happened.
And the continuity of having Tahad and Overton and Sebastian back just feels like, I mean, I've been saying it all week, like who else in the conference is going to be – I mean, Florida gets huge news that Kondo's coming back, but like who else in the conference is going to be able to say like 3 or 4 of your top players in minutes played from last year are back on the team?
Listen, and it's – I try to tell people, it's exactly what Michigan did. And they went out and got – they really went out and got one elite guy. Jackson Lindenberg was the only one of those guys that was elite last year. Like, Mara wasn't elite at UCLA last year. Johnson wasn't elite at Illinois. And, look, they were kicked. They kicked a point guard out of North Carolina, basically said to go somewhere else, you can't play, Elliot Cadeau. But they put the pieces together with guys that were currently on the roster. That's what you got to do. You got to have some building blocks. Go find an elite guy. Can you go find an elite guy out of the portal to help you? But I think you got some elite. The difference is Michigan didn't have Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton and Slay. Yeah. You've got some elite talent if you keep those guys to build around, and I think that's a big deal.
And I do wonder if, like, I do wonder what kind of, especially with Badunga off the board, like what kind of superstar 4-5s are out there, or if that's really what you need, or if you need to find 80 minutes in your front court.
That's it. I think you got a big kid from France, Goy. What can he give you? Can you if you get Thomas Dowd at the four, and can you find somebody else that can be a strong defender, can handle the ball, can shoot it from, you know, I'm not necessarily saying shooting threes. Can you find a guy that can knock down a 15-footer and make his free throws and go get 8 rebounds a game? Because it feels like, for me, from a scoring standpoint, mm-hmm. you're going to have some scoring on this team.
Yeah.
Can you get a guy? This is my go-to comparison when I think about it. Can you find Bill Winnington? I think about those Bulls mm-hmm. teams, whether it was Winnington or Luke Longley or whoever it was, you had elite guard play outside, and you had a guy that, look, if you leave him open from the baseline on 12 feet, he's going to make a shot. I just think about what would have been possible if you had that guy even this year. And Keyshawn was a guy that was stepped out and shot threes, and he did. But can you find that solid guy? I think you need a solid guy.
And I don't want to diminish the contributions of the front court on the 17-18 team that won the league, or the 18-19 team that went to the Final Four, right? But, like, you know, I think Austin, I mean, look, finding Austin would be pretty close to what you're looking for.
That's it. And he wasn't the guy that was going to make that shot.
No,
but he was a rebounder, and he played good defense.
Yeah, you had dirty work, you know, eager guys.
From your
4-5,
from both of them. That's it.
In the front court.
Yes, and you go, you had Chuma that could, Chuma Sway.
Mm-hmm.
Comparison mm-hmm. because he could play 3 and 4. Can Sway's improve his shot this year and do those things? I mean, like, there's some things that you don't have to be. And listen, Michigan didn't have 5 NBA players. They might have had 3 of them, but they had guys that you had an elite guy or two. Feels like Auburn's elite guys are going to be on the perimeter. Can you get guys that complement them? And it felt like last year you just threw a bunch of things together. It was like a recipe where.
Yeah.
Hey, we don't know what we're making, but here it is, the ingredients, and you throw them in a bowl.
Yeah, and not just to say nothing about.
And you didn't have any choice. That's what you had to do.
Yeah, like, all due respect, like, Keyshawn Hall had the season he had, and Keyshawn Murphy was out there working hard. You do wonder if you'd taken that approach last year and said, let's go all sort of blue collar, dirty work front court guys who don't really need the ball or don't really want too much, and you're gonna count on your perimeter to give you a ton of the offense.
Like, yeah.
I wonder what would have been different, because it feels like this year that approach, having seen Overton play the way he did and knowing what Todd's capable of,
yeah,
like, feels like that's something they might try to do. I mean, and Thomas Dowd is, I think, more of a scorer than that.
Yeah.
But
no, I think he would be an offensive weapon more than you had this season, for sure. Because when I saw this team that just finished, I think the changes in your roster, where you have the kid from Huntsville gets hurt. He has a foot injury. Sets him back. Bashir gets hurt. And then whatever happened to Cade Magwood happened.
Yeah, and Aporum got hurt.
Yeah, yeah. But it felt like, when I watched them this summer, it felt like it was going to be 2017-18.
Yeah.
It felt like it was going to be a very up-tempo team. I think it was built that way. And then when you didn't have enough guys, you couldn't play that way anymore. And they had to slow it down, and then you weren't made to play that way.
People forget Jared had backups.
Yes,
right. I mean, people forget about Davion.
Yeah,
and Javon McCormick.
I mean, yeah. They had a roster that was designed to play that way, and they played that way. But even then, they had a lot of ups and downs. They got hot. Felt like this year, you wanted to play that way, and then when those pieces left you, and all of a sudden it took some of your perimeter shooting with it. You didn't have enough guys to play that way anymore. And then it felt like they wanted to be up-tempo, and they just couldn't do it.
And trying to be up-tempo when your two guards are playing, when you're starting backcourt.
34, 35
having to play 35 minutes.
All three of them.
There were games when
– Yeah, I mean, but that's probably average.
Yeah, I was going to say there were games –
at the end of the year?
There were games where the backups weren't playing at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it was such a surprise to see Magwood.
If it was 2 minutes, it was – yeah, it was a shock to see Magwood in the NIT.
Proof of life of Cade Magwood in the NIT. And it's like, wait a minute, this guy's been gone the entire conference season.
No, it was to me, it was a big part of things where you're trying to ask guys to play that many minutes and to play that way, and you weren't able to do it.
Real quick, I know we got to take a break, but like real quick, how big is it to find, like, I mean, it's gonna be, I think with the minutes Tahad, you assume Tahad commands, I think finding someone else at point guard might be,
just look, Keyshawn Hall was 33, Tahad was 32, Kevin Overton 31.
So finding someone else to come
if
in.
If you can
and,
go 28 and 12. Just go, hey, look, we're going to play you 14 minutes.
Well, if you get a combo guy that he can get 10 to 12 minutes at both, then you're fine.
And that's it. And so, yes.
Then you get somebody that gets 20 plus, you know, you get.
Or you get a 2-3 and Overton plays some of those minutes at the. At the one, depending on which one.
Well,
I mean,
as long as the three guys are getting 80, I mean, you can get you know, a couple of guys 30, and the other one gets 20. So yeah. I mean, it works however you do it.
Do you feel like Overton can play the one enough to where that
third
guy?
Yeah, I think, he can play in 5 to 10 minutes.
I think that's ideal. I think that's what you're looking for. I was trying to think, go back to those teams. Jared Harper played 30. Bryce Brown played 31. Mustafa Heron played 28.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, yeah.
And asking Simon to play 20 next year is probably a pretty big ask.
No, I think – but again, can he be 10-12? That's what – can you get 10-12 from those guys to give you 10 of those guys instead of 8?
All right, we need to get to our first break. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here with us on the Wednesday Drive. Love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Come on in and join Bill, Dan, and Jason here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Yellowwood knows that a fire
live on the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell here in the studio. Let's talk a little baseball, Jason. I mean, what a performance last night. Granted, I mean, Alabama State, but, I mean, to throw a near perfecto, multiple pitchers, Griffin Graves just cruised through three innings. We were talking a little bit yesterday, and, you know, the talk was, you know, maybe a couple. I was like, you know, if he could give you three, and he gave Auburn three easy innings, made quick work of Alabama State in three perfect innings last night on Auburn's way to that 13-0 win.
Yeah, look solid in doing it. You think about him, and I thought, look, it was easy. He was 91. You know, the velocity will continue to come back as he throws
more. He hit a 93, I think.
Yeah, he was 94, 95 last year. But he was able to throw breaking ball, do stuff. I thought it was a good outing for him. And, you know, listen, I've seen people go, listen, oh, it's Alabama State. Well, Alabama State was way better than West Georgia was. Mm-hmm. And that was a 4-3 game that you struggled in. Much better at bats last night. Listen, it's not Florida. Florida's pitching staff is going to be way more talented. You're going to strike out more this weekend. It's just going to happen.
Well, it's going to add about 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, but
I thought
the approaches, Eric Gavar is red hot, but Chris Rimmer going the other way. We've seen guys start to use the entire field again. And when that happens, that's when this team's at its best. It's just like Ike Irish the last few years. I think Chase Frelick's the same way. We saw him, like, he hit a couple of balls hard and then finally got a hit there in the end. But, look, Rembert went the other way with a big double.
Bubba had bombed a dead center.
Dead center field. Listen, I thought there was more patience and letting the ball get a little bit deeper. I talked to Gabe Gross yesterday, and he's like, look, that's what we're trying to say is, look, let it get deep. Because if you don't and you're trying to hit the ball out in front of you, then you're going to roll over and hit a bunch of ground balls. And we didn't see a bunch of that last night. If they can keep playing that way and the way they pitch it, this is a team that can go out and compete with anybody on the schedule.
And you know, we've talked about how, and you know it, I mean, baseball is such a game of streaks.
It is.
When a team gets hot or when, you know, you see a lineup, the Auburn's lineup was inexplicably cold.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody seemed to be slumping. They're starting to come around. And, yeah, don't just disregard a game because it was Alabama State.
Momentum is
this,
a real
this,
thing.
Yeah, this team is gaining confidence and – They want to get up there and have at bats, whereas they're not worried about stepping in the box and being out 0-2.
They went 14 games without hitting a home run with a person on base, and they've had six the last two games.
Two games, right.
I mean, like, it's legit, it's real. And, look, you know, You go to Florida. Brendan Lawson's is one of the best hitters in the league. Ethan Sirwick is a guy that transferred from Ole Miss. That's talented, and you know, from a pitching standpoint, I mean, they can really throw it. I mean, they get, like I said, the strikeout numbers for them are things that you look at. Liam Peterson is really good, 66 strikeouts in 45 innings, and Aiden King is, you know, 1.74 ERA. So look, this is a team that will challenge you. Luke McNeely as a closer has moved in and kind of done some things on that back end, and then Josh Whitenauer. So look, gonna be a challenge, but in a quick turnaround for this team.
What's the pitching play?
Yeah, it's gonna be Alvarez. Jackson Sanders gonna stay in the bullpen.
Okay.
So it's gonna be Alvarez, Marciano, Petrovic. I think they like Jackson Sanders in that bullpen role. And listen, if you can stay that way and he can turn into the Carson Skipper, Carson Myers role, mm-hmm. that we've seen the last 2 years, can you get eventually, can you get Griffin Graves to be another one of those arms?
And listen, great when they're both lefties,
yeah,
too.
I mean, look, Jet Johnson got back on the mound. We did some things. Garrett Brewer, we mm-hmm. saw last weekend.
He looked great.
Can you carry that over? And then, obviously, you got Hetzer on the back end. And then, look, there's some L.J. Cormier has been good.
Right.
That gives you some depth on a weekend again. And that's what this team you want to do. You go, look, can you go pitch it, you know, and keep yourself in the game? Can you get to six runs? And as Butch Thompson said, when they got into six runs the last 2 years, they won 80% of their games. And I looked, and if they had scored just six runs in SEC play this year, you don't have to score 15, just six, they'd be 13-2 right now.
Yeah, that's and they definitely are capable of doing that.
Correct.
So we'll see. Tell you what we need. Let's get back on track. Is that all right? We got a call holding, but we'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break because Jason's got to get out a little early. So we'll have one more segment with Jason and get to your phone calls. Well, we had a phone call. Guess we lost him. Call us back 334-321-1390 here on the Wednesday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell. And we're here with you on this Wednesday edition. Jason with us for one more segment. So let's talk a little football, Jason. Yesterday we had the opportunity to hear Isaac Scullish.
Yeah.
When I went over there, Jason and a few guys were waiting to, I guess, catch some recruits.
Yeah.
And some folks that had been watching the scrimmage.
Yeah, I had a chance to kind of get some thoughts on it. And, of course, Alex Scullish is a guy that probably gives you more information immediately after a scrimmage than any coach we've had in a long time.
It's been a long time.
Yeah,
you're right.
So he actually will
Since
name.
Since back in the days where we could keep up actually, with what was going on.
He will actually name a player instead of saying we need to watch the film first. And you know, some of the names we heard, like you hear about guys that played well, and two of those yesterday were the true freshman wide receivers. Deshaun mm-hmm. Spencer is a guy that's been playing well, and seen a bunch of him back to his days at Saraland, and so it's not a surprise. Brian Williams Jr. has been a guy that's probably helped himself as much as anybody, and like that's a deep wide receiver room. There's a bunch of guys out there. I talked to some folks yesterday. Go, look, he's going to help us this fall. That's not what I expected coming into this. I did not expect him to be a guy that jumped into the rotation at wide receiver. At the moment, it sure feels like he's done that through the spring so far.
Beyond Nimrod and Singleton, it feels pretty wide open as far as
Koger.
Koger's there too.
He is the other guy. There's no question about him.
But it feels like it's like I've seen different sort of next man up rotations there, and mm-hmm. you know, it feels like the same guys consistently at first, and then they're evaluating who else. And Brian Williams Jr. is one where it's really apparent that Alex Golish and Cody Burns are paying really close attention when Williams Jr. is doing his reps. I've seen Alex Golish come over and provide some instruction for Williams personally after one of those, especially when he's working with the quarterbacks when they're catching balls from Byram.
Yep.
And yeah, I think there's a belief that, I mean, you said it. He's one of those guys, Bill, that you said was like he looks like a receiver.
He's a bigger body guy.
Reminds me of LSU receivers.
Yeah, bigger body. You know? He does. If you looked at that guy, he said, yeah, bigger body guy. And as gets through now the spring and you go summer conditioning and workouts, he's a guy that'll be faster in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you get there, that'll help him be more explosive. Probably the thing that jumped out was yesterday. Well, I think they upped the tempo yesterday, and I think it got on the backs of guys a little bit. I think they were a little
that
bit,
helps the offense.
It was a little bit sluggish, though. I think even offensively, he felt like you're a little bit sluggish to kind of respond, but I think it was good for him to do some of that. But here's the thing. They responded in the second half and finished good, which I thought was a big deal.
Jason, was it you that wrote that somebody you'd talked to was talking about the energy when Alex Gullish was complaining about it there at the beginning?
Yeah, yep, they did. Like he said, look, that's the difference is people that had not been to practice before, not under this staff, and they go, man, how crazy it was. And Gullish was like, well, that wasn't what he wanted. That tells you what the expectations are. I did. I talked to a few players that played under Coach Dye, and they left and they went. That's what it felt like. Now, look, a long way to go till you start, you know, doing what they did under those teams. But I think there's a old school feel a little bit to what they're doing this spring in terms of how the practices are going. There is much more, and the word is energy, but the word to me has been. And trying to think about how to describe it, but there is a purpose for everything they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting in and out of drills. They're doing those things. And so that's it. But from an individual standpoint, you know, you still got a couple of tackles that are banged up. So it was Ty Buster and Joe Simmons. And it was left tackle, right tackle, then right tackle, left tackle. They were swapping back and forth with the first team. It feels like those two guys would be the leaders at the moment, but I'm still in the same camp. I think Joe Simmons is on the field somewhere.
Right.
I think Ty Buster's on the field somewhere. The only one I know right now that I feel like where he's going to be is Cole Best. Mm-hmm. After that, I have no idea what the offensive line is going to look like. But
the fact that you're talking about Buster, like aside from Cole Best, Ty Buster's someone you feel as good about as anyone, more or less.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty remarkable because Auburn brought in guys who had a lot more playing time than Ty Buster, had a lot more experience.
He's a guy that I firmly believe. By the end of the year last year, that Jake Thornton, that's a staff that probably felt like, man, we should have played him.
Should have played. Mm-hmm. Well, and the other guy now he wasn't out there yesterday, but a guy that's that has been a surprise to me at least to see him out there as much as he's been with the ones been Wilson's ear.
Yeah. Yep, got a boot right now, so mm-hmm. dealing with probably a minor ankle injury because he was walking around on a boot, so. Don't know that we'll even see him Saturday, so
right.
Spring may be done, but I think he's done enough to put his name in, at least into the hat this spring. And so those guys, Omar Mabson and Tay Meadows, Hanley played at Troy last year running back. Those two guys had some plays. Omar's probably the most physical of the back so far because Bryson Washington probably hadn't had a chance to do a whole lot. And then defensively, look, I heard Malik Autry's name and heard Jared Smith's name. Those were two that jump out to you. But I think yesterday was the first time that the offense probably answered the bell of the defense. And they did not – listen, they have not taken it easy. There's been none of that to go, no, they have attacked. They're keeping the attack on defensively. And, listen, he said it, but Byron Brown missed a couple throws but was in complete control. And as I wrote, you know, yesterday – the impossibility of this thing is that much like spring in 2010, and much like spring in 2013, the unknown of this offense because of what his legs are going to bring changes everything about what this team looks like when you actually get on the field.
Yeah, I like hearing that.
There's some of that. There's some of that in 2010. Too,
oh yeah,
right?
I mean, yeah.
I remember, 2010
and 13.
I mean, 2010 to 2013.
Because that, I mean, I think 13 is the one where it's like the quarterback competition stretched really deep into relatively deep.
Well,
into,
13 had changed when they went live.
Yes,
that changed everything. They never went live with Cam. They knew what he could do, but Arkansas State opening night, they went, okay, this is different than even that we thought it was.
Yeah, Nick, of course, had been a DB.
Yes.
Georgia. So.
I remember, I mean, in 2010, there were folks, like, worried about Cam's passing.
Oh, right? After A-Day.
It was A-Day. Yeah. I mean, like, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. Wasn't a terribly accurate passer at A-Day.
And the thing is, it's because, you know, Saturday, who knows what Byron Brown does. I don't think he'll throw it 30 times. And it may not be a perfect day him throwing a football. But the difference is when all of a sudden – you go off schedule because he's moving and getting outside the pocket. And on Saturday, if they get within 4 feet of him, they're going to blow the whistle.
Right.
Well, in Saturday in September, they're going to have to get him on the ground. And that means you got an extra 3 seconds to find a receiver. Like, it can change everything.
Well, you were talking about Byram having, you know, everything in complete control, and Alex Golish talking about not ever being at a situation this far along with installs on offense. But I love hearing that he is confident enough in Byram Brown and his offense that he wants DJ Durkin throwing everything he's got at him all the time.
Yeah, there's no taking it easy. And, you know, you're right. And he said, look, 300 level, 400 level, now 500 level, like the graduate level.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we talked about. We talked about when you come in and you have your OC coming in and you have a wide receiver coach coming in and you have an offensive line coach coming in and you're running the same system and you have the quarterback in the center and wide receivers. You're not starting at ground zero day one. They started 4 or 5 steps ahead. I think that's been big for them.
And a lot was made last season of the idea that Hugh Freeze wanted the defense to take it easy and you know,
so but, to help build Jackson's confidence.
Well, that's the thing is not just build Jackson, rebuild Jackson's confidence after the season.
This is almost like, come at him, let's see what you got, because I'm confident in Byron.
It gets back to you've got a quarterback now who's coming in with the positive momentum of having just played really well last season. And that's a kind of a rare thing for Auburn.
But the other part is, too, is like, listen, I don't necessarily disagree with what they did last spring.
Right.
Because in the end, I don't think it was that stunted Jackson's growth. Because, listen, we also saw Ashton Daniels play in that offense, and he wasn't any good either.
Mm-hmm.
And when they changed and went tempo at the end of the year and took some of those things away and went faster, all of a sudden they started playing better. I don't think that was it. I just think it just wasn't going to work. Yeah. And sometimes it just doesn't work.
Jason, also, I think you also wrote Tristan Tia with a couple of impressive plays.
Listen, that's
the
guy
as well.
That when they signed him out of Oregon State, I watched him and I was like, holy cow. Because, again, I think I said on here, I hesitate to bring up the comparison for me, but it looks a lot like Aaron Rodgers when he throws a football. It's so easy.
We had somebody yesterday wondering, who's the backup quarterback? We haven't heard anything.
I'd be really surprised. Here's the thing now. I think for them, they're like, look.
There's no controversy. Let's be clear. Byram is
the man.
He's the guy. But I'm telling you, if you're having to play catch up and you're having to throw the football, would I be shocked to see Tristan Tia go in the game and sling it a little bit? I wouldn't. I don't think you do that. But I think, look. Would they hesitate? I don't think they'd hesitate if they felt like, man, this guy's able to go play. But I think this spring has been really important for them to get a feel for what he can do in this offense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you build on that, get through A-Day, get through the summer, get him on the field some? Because I've heard some people go, man, I hope he redshirts. No. Play.
Hey, I hope the NCAA goes ahead and gets the 5 for 5 so you don't have to worry about that crap anymore.
But listen, go ahead. There's nothing more important than playing time. Can you get into some games where you get him and let him go play? I'm not worried about keeping a guy for 5 years.
Not worried about 2 years from now yet?
No.
Well,
no,
so,
no.
I mean, I can understand why in football a coaching staff would be hyper-focused on this season. Like, okay, it's all about how things go this year. And any vision beyond this year is kind of a luxury because, you know, you don't know who's going to be back and who isn't.
Right.
This staff does seem like, and some of it's by design with the players they've brought in.
They feel like they're more into development, don't they?
It feels like, especially on the offense, like there are multiple positions where you feel like you have a guy that they feel good about that may not see the field much this year. But he could be a big part of, I mean, whether it's Tia, whether it's, I mean, certainly I'd say every underclassman running back, you could say that about. I mean, we've mentioned multiple freshman receivers.
I think some of the young offensive linemen that we haven't talked about.
And there are numerous offensive linemen.
I don't think you can forfeit the future by not doing those things. But I think you have to be realistic and go, listen, you got to do whatever you can to win every game right now, no matter what.
I mean, every year now.
You can't do it. You can't. That's my thought, like a Tristan Tia. You're like, well, man, we'd like to save that guy to keep a red shirt, but is he that much better than our three? And if we have to play, well, you got to play that guy.
Yeah.
Because if he can help you win one game, I mean, just think about one game difference the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Just one game.
Oh, no kidding. Well, again, that's why it just would make so much sense if we could go ahead and just get the
correct,
five.
Just do
five.
The 5 for 5.
Because there are, like, the offensive line's a great example.
You've been a proponent of that
for a long time.
Decade or more.
There's a version of this offensive line where it's seniors
or
upperclassmen.
Upperclassmen, yeah.
And you don't see Ty Buster or Jacoby Ward or
Wilson Zier
or Kale Ellis or Wilson Zier. Maybe.
But those are four guys. Those are four guys right there that could together and go, man, that's a pretty good young line.
And what's Plaz? Plaz is
a sophomore.
So there's
five guys we just mentioned.
There's also a version of an offensive line where you're going, man, we're going to get those guys reps because there's not that much difference. We want to play those guys because who knows? It's when I thought about like a guy like Ty Buster last year. If you play in that guy a little bit early, and normally I'm not saying rotate. This is not a rotation on the offensive line. People have always been like, well, do it like wide receiver. No, you don't do it that. But if you have a guy that's pretty close, and you go, let's see him because he's a young guy, and this guy's a senior. And if they're close, which one of those guys is going to be better by the end of the year? It's going to be the young guy. Those reps are going to be more valuable to him at a developmental position like the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you get to that point where you're going, hey, look, let's get those guys get their feet wet a little bit and play in some real games, and then – they got a taste of it. And when you turn it over next year, all of a sudden you go, those guys have played. And now we think they're ready. I think that's valuable no matter where you are.
Jason, I know you got to run. Let everybody know. I mean, as we said at the outset, I mean, there's a lot going on. Just let everybody know what y'all are going to be covering and how they can keep up with it all.
Busy, yes, is the key word there. Baseball starts Thursday, so that'll be Thursday through Saturday. 11 o'clock first pitch Saturday. We'll run right up to A-Day. So, I'll get to keep up with baseball for a while, and by the time I write my game story, it may be 5 o'clock or so. But recruits on campus this weekend, obviously A-Day coverage. And I think we'll have a chance to have some video from that because it's not shown anywhere.
Right.
So there's no TV, there's no streaming, there's nothing. So we'll have some highlights, some of that stuff from there, so you can check it out, auburnundercover.com. And always, Nathan, we'll be keeping up with that basketball portal, which is, as we mentioned early in this first hour, is about as crazy as it gets. So, auburnundercover.com, all the social media platforms, and come check us out.
Jason, thanks a lot. Really appreciate spending time with you.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Patrick.
Sports Auburn Undercover joining us for most of hour number one. He had to leave a little early, but man, our hour two guys already—he's already here. You talk about being—he is never late. At least he hasn't been for any of his time here with us. And that's of course Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. Adam, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. No, you got to be early, right? If you're early, you're on time. Isn't that what they say?
It's still fun for him.
If you're ever in my house, you'll notice if you look at the clocks. All the clocks, except for the digital ones that set themselves, are 5 minutes fast.
That's smart. That's just smart.
That's primarily there for my wife.
Yeah,
no,
like that's how I operate. It's like I'm not. I do not
like walking in late.
Me neither. And it's all, I mean, me, my mom, my dad, and my brother, it's all, you know, one kid has one thing from one parent, and it's like my dad's always the one who's got to find something to do last minute when we're leaving, and my brother gets the same way, and I can't stand it. So, no, yeah, got to be early.
Well, that's cool. How's things been going for you this week?
They've been good. The folks were actually in town over the weekend, so they got to see. They saw about a game and a third of the Kentucky series over the weekend. They went to the game Saturday night and had GA tickets and didn't bring any lawn chairs, so they left about three innings in.
Oh yeah,
You're covering baseball remotely, I imagine, these next couple of days. I don't know if you're making the especially with the spring game on Saturday too. We were just talking to Jason about that and sort of the unfortunate. There's probably a way to do double duty, but it's not.
It's tough on Saturday with an 11 o'clock first pitch baseball and a 2 o'clock A-Day game,
sure. and the game and the later game on Friday right?
So that's where it was cool when you did have a home series, and you just walk across the street, from one to the other.
It's too bad. I know they were hyping up like A-Day week started last weekend with the Kentucky series, but. You're right. It is kind of there's nice cohesion when you have baseball weekend with the spring game.
All right. So Adam is with us. We're just about to get to our top of the hour break. We've got an hour to go. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Adam Cole from Montgomery Advertiser in with us here in hour number two. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell, who was with us for most of the first hour. A busy, busy time, Adam. I mean, it is it's a fun time. I mean, we've got baseball entering the second half of conference play. Basketball season is done, but, man, the portal season is really churning. I mean, and today there's – you know, some concerns about is Auburn, is there a possibility of Auburn seeing a player who apparently was staying, maybe entering the portal? We talked about it a little bit in the first hour with Jason. I mean, some rumblings about Sway. I mean, and again, it's not crazy because the portal is open. We saw it last year with the CBM with Chad, you know, apparently staying and then entering the portal. So, look, players and their reps are hearing from schools. And I would say as some players that were targets of certain schools decide to go elsewhere, probably the price goes up for what they would pay for someone else who hasn't entered the portal yet.
Yeah, no, it really has become a thing where you feel pretty safe, all things considered, when you put out an announcement or whatever, but it's not done until you're through 14 days. And so it'll be interesting to see, especially with – you know, Auburn hasn't technically brought in a transfer commit yet. Mm-hmm. I saw a tweet about that earlier today. I think it was like, yeah, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, UConn, Michigan State, Texas Tech, St. John's, Vanderbilt, those are all on that list as well, which is – it has felt it's felt unseasonably slow.
It really has. I mean, I know some Auburn people are like, oh, Auburn's so far behind. It's like, no, there are a lot of kids that apparently are wanting – they're not ready to just jump at the first thing that they hear. They're wanting to check out and find out exactly, you know, what options they have.
Yeah,
multiple options.
And I can't say I blame them, because I mean the less time you give somebody, surely that number, whoever it's coming from, is going to go up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see where it all goes. But I think, you know, as much as it could be as much as it could change based on just the rumor mill, I suppose. But you know, you've got to feel pretty good about the fact that, like, you've at least kind of got your most recent roster seemingly settled, seemingly figured out of, okay, who's coming back and who's not. But, yeah, I'll be interested to see just what it's going to look like once these transfer commits start coming in, you know, because it might be a flurry.
Well, I was thinking, and I guess just as recently as yesterday, I said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see an addition here by the weekend, because we'll be getting to the last couple of days before the portal closes for players to enter. Now, they don't have to make a decision by next Tuesday, I guess, is the last day that the portal is open. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to make decisions by then. But I think that a lot of players will be getting ready. They will have had time to either visit or spend time, you know, Zooming with multiple schools and be closer to making decisions.
You saw this team play all season long. How big is the retention of Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton? Like being able to pair those guys up for another season.
Well, yeah, because when it initially happens, you think, okay, great, like, you know, everything ends on a high note, yada yada, and you know, you saw the strength of those guys, I think, on display, especially towards the end of the year. But the fact that you have basically returned two starters, and one of whom was a preseason All-American in Pettiford,
and the other one was MVP of the NIT.
Right, like that's that's just you've got a good chunk of your starting lineup pretty well fleshed out, which I think you have to be really happy about, and I think it makes the portal that much simpler. You know, I mean, you go look for starting caliber guys in the front court, absolutely, but when you look at your back court, you know, it's more a matter of depth at this point, and I think it's significant not only for next season, but it just makes everything, I think, this off season so much easier, the fact that you have those two guys back, and especially, I mean, if you can build around, you know, I say build around Tahad, I don't know that means that in the most, you know, literal of senses, but if you compare him with another front court, kind of like he got to have his freshman year, not necessarily in, you know, a player of the year candidate and a, you know, all defensive player of the year candidate, but, you know, two capable forwards and big men who give some lob potential and some threat of protection around the rim. Like, if you can get that and you keep Pettiford and Overton, like, that's, you've got a pretty good stew going, so to speak.
334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'd love for you to join in. Any thoughts that you have? We just touched on basketball. Obviously, mentioned baseball entering the second half, and Auburn coming off a nice weekend. And then, man, what a performance last night. Great to see Griffin Graves back out there, and he cruised through three innings last night. I mean, I know there were some concerns. Is he going to be able to make it through two? I looked up, what did he have, like 20 pitches through two innings last night? So, mm-hmm. I mean, no problems with three perfect innings last night. And speaking of perfect, Auburn was near perfect for the entire game. 6 1/3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Perfect.
No, Alabama State didn't get their first hit until they had, one out or two outs left. But, no, I think that was, you know, you're tickled to see that from Griffin, absolutely. But I think you're also happy about the fact, I was thinking about this earlier today, like the fact that you came that close to doing something of that caliber in a bullpen game. Like, mm-hmm. I know it's Alabama State, but that's right. It's such a rarity that, like, you, there's a healthy confidence boost that I think you need to take from that as a pitching staff, especially because I think you felt maybe a little more questions, you know, as far as your bullpen goes, but there's a lot of confidence that I think everybody can take from that game, but especially this pitching staff and the depth of it all. You know, especially, I mean, you see Jet Johnston go like that. And then, I mean, Abe Chancellor striking out the side, mm-hmm. that was not on my bingo card.
No, by any means.
Yeah. And I thought you've gotten a couple of really impressive performances out of the bullpen just in the last couple of weeks.
Oh my goodness!
Right?
Yeah, it goes back. I mean, Auburn's on a 21 inning scoreless streak right now, and it goes back to Kulik and yeah. Brewer there coming in for the final seven innings in Game 2 against Kentucky.
And those are two players that, I mean, Kulik going back to when he came in against Texas, right, in that game that Auburn ended up not winning, but the second game of the Texas series when Auburn was on the ropes, was Texas, right? It was Texas or Alabama. But there's that game where like things have slipped away and Butch goes to Kulik, and it was like his first appearance in Cincinnati. I'm almost certain it was Texas. But then Brewer this past weekend, Bill. Mm-hmm. That's
the best I've seen him.
That Brewer appearance. It was really funny. My folks were in town. They left that one early, and then they get home. They get back to the hotel, and they texted me, and they were like, "We're just all kind of confused because it's suddenly like a 3-run ball game." But like, my dad could not stop talking about how good Garrett Brewer was, mm-hmm. and I just kept telling him, "I'm like, that's like it looked like his season was on the ropes up until that. Like, he has not looked that good all year, and to get 3 2/3 scoreless out of him with what 6 strikeouts, like." You need that for those guys in relief, right. Especially, you know, I mean, we have not talked much about the significance of losing Drew Whalen, I feel like, this year. Mm-hmm. And that was just, I think that was massive. You had a middle relief guy who you could probably plug into a starting role if you needed. And
very much.
Suddenly that's just gone. So the fact that you got that out of Garrett Brewer, the fact you continue to get this out of Kulik, like, that's Auburn needs those sorts of performances out of the bullpen, because the more that they can strengthen this staff, as much as it's already their strength, is just it's going to carry them so far.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Jackson Sanders right now is at least for the time being, sort of the odd man out of the weekend rotation, a guy that, you know, is just a couple of weeks removed from being SEC Pitcher of the Week. And last time he went out, he threw four, like, fabulous shutout innings.
Yeah, he is. To see that in a bullpen role, like, I had not fathomed it, but the fact that you have a guy like that who you could parachute in behind any starter, and suddenly you go from, you know, pretty standard release points and all that to sidearm and all this sweeping action, like, that is a dastardly combination. I'm really curious to see how they use him next and how it all looks.
It was game two of the Texas series. I went back and looked. Sixth inning, Auburn is down 7-2, and Texas has a runner on second. One out, and Auburn goes to Kulik, who you haven't seen again since.
No.
I mean, at that point, you hadn't seen him since Cincinnati, and you got the feeling like, well, you need game three to win the series tomorrow. Is this a white flag, right? You're down 5 with, you know, and Texas is threatening, and all he does is come in and get 4 strikeouts in an inning and a half. Like, it was, and he's shown himself to be a more high leverage, more worthy of high leverage moments since then. So, yeah, I think there's a couple of, it feels more, the question marks are more offense.
Yeah.
Than pitching.
And the last couple of ball games, as a guy who was, I was a hitter. I wasn't a pitcher. I mean, I'm much more, I enjoy seeing Auburn rake, and it's been really nice the last couple of games. I guess it started with Bubs' two-run shot against that monster shot against Kentucky. But now, you know, Auburn's done something six times in the last two games that they hadn't done in a couple of weeks.
Right. They hadn't done since
17th, I think.
Yeah, since March 17th, yeah, they had not had a I guess it hasn't even been a full month yet. That feels like it's 5 years ago some reason.
Doesn't it?
The fact that you're finally getting that, and the thing that I love that I'm seeing more, especially like Chris Rembert's probably the best example of it. I think you've seen it on a few hits from like Chase Fralick too, but you know, you work deep in the count and like you're getting a healthy base knock and hard contact, but you're going opposite field.
Right.
You know, it's that two strike.
If the ball's
outside,
you're driving it that way.
Right.
To the opposite field.
Exactly. And it's like, they've gotten that. I think it was Eric's first home run last night, but you saw it. Like, he was in a 1-2 count at the time, and he kind of lips out over the plate and just knocks it. But, you know, sometimes you catch him, and you mistake your way into a home run, so to speak. And, like, to see that has really impressed me, and I think that's a hugely positive sign. And, you know, it helps, too, when a guy like Eric Rivar is basically just seeing a beach ball right now.
Oh,
like,
man. He's getting close to the 400 mark.
He is. I've been super, super impressed with him as a guy who looked kind of up and down through the first couple years. You know, maybe had a little, you know, in a literal sense, trouble with the curve. Like, he's looked really great in terms of approach at the plate. And of course, like when he gets the bat on it, it seems to go and go hard and go fast. So you've got a few pieces now that are linking it up, and that's what you need. That's how it starts. You know, it's the Gravaras and the Remberts and the Bubs, you know, a handful of pieces, and mm-hmm. then you hope it just matriculates out. So,
you know, a guy, I guess we haven't talked as much about him, but a guy who's really, really impressed me all year long is Brandon McClain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't get as much talk, but I mean, he's playing a really good shortstop. And he just going out there and you know, hitting 340, just, you know, solid shots. He's not getting little bloops. I mean, he's line drives all over the field.
Is it normal for a team in the top five or the top 10 to have, because we talked about it last year, but like how especially in this era of like player movement, that Butch was still willing to bet on really young pieces that he thought would be able to help him sooner rather than later, and it paid off last year with some freshmen that are a big part of the roster. But it's like seeing a team ranked as highly as Auburn is with a freshman at the 7 hole and a freshman at the 8. Like, I mean, the bottom third.
Bingaman has hit anywhere from the middle of the order, around. I mean, and he's a true freshman.
Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily super common. I do think the one exception with this team is the fact that, like, you've got three sophomores in that lineup that you kind of built it around. And then, you know, I think the way the chips fell with the starting rotation of, you know, you've got a sophomore in Alvarez, sophomore in Marciano, sophomore in Sanders. Like, this team was always going to be kind of young, however much it succeeded or not. But, like, I don't really think it's super common. That's always something I've wanted to go back and look at, is it's like, okay, how many freshmen are actually contributing, like, on average, to an SEC team year in, year out?
To a good SEC team.
Right, because it feels like Auburn's really, you know, Auburn's really hit the right notes on that over the last few years, just consistently. I don't think it's that common, but you got to be pretty pleased with it at this point, because that's three years in a row of talking about it now, it seems like. So
again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports wise A-Day coming up this Saturday, we'll talk a little football and more, but love for you to join in as we get to our first break of hour number two of the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Hey, everybody, this is Jacob Goins from On the Line.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill, Dan, and from Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio. Yeah, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about. Adam covers everything that he can. I mean, as much as one person can, I would guess.
Yeah.
They're at Auburn. But, I mean, football, basketball, baseball. At all those events, we've got Got what Adam Golish said he hopes is a fun A-Day coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, that it made me giggle when he was like, I just haven't really been thinking about it much. You know, just like it's so, you know, I have no doubt that for him everything
I'm sure
the next hour right now.
You know, the format and whatever of the A-Day game is not at the top of his concerns right now. It's like getting as much as he can out of every single practice.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it seems like we've reached that point of like we're just talking about, you know, obviously there's always the mention of, okay, who shined today and who didn't, but like it just seems like the repetitive theme, whatever it looks like, is a fine-tuning of details. You know, he talked about that aha moment that the offense had. I thought what he said about Byram was really like, you know, the fact that he's on a different level right now than he was a spring ago in terms of, you know, where this offense is in part because of him. But, like, I thought that was really interesting, and it makes me a lot more curious for what this offense is going to look like come Saturday. But, yeah, it seems like they've kind of reached a point of it's just we're down to the particulars right now, you know. And yeah, like you said, I mean, getting as much as possible out of every practice.
Well, it's nice, too, that we're not in an era where I feel like spring practice used to have this cloud of, well, not only could your players leave after these spring practice is over, but you also could be going into the portal and adding like you think about Hugh Freeze's first three seasons at Auburn, only three, but it's like they were adding.
They're adding like Kieron Crawfords and guys like that after
Peyton Thorne.
After spring.
Add Peyton Thorne after spring practice is over. Add the Penn State receiver, right? Keandre.
Mm-hmm.
Very huge pieces to the roster. You're watching position groups in the spring, and you're saying, "Is the starter on the team?" Right? And it's like I'm not doing that with this group. Right?
Well, because there's no portal coming up after the spring,
and it also it has sort of elevated the overall. Like you feel like, okay, well there's no group where it's like, okay, well they're missing. I mean, yes, Stanton Ramil's injured. But, like, you're not looking at any position group on the team right now and feel like, boy, they could really use a starter, right? Like, it feels like they've gone out and they've – I mean, maybe there are places where they
– I think Auburn's fortunate in that sense because, yes, the last few years they've needed. They've definitely needed to go out and find somebody that could come in and, if not start, better compete for that job because you're not 100% sure you've got guys that you're ready to, you know, go out there and fight with. This Saturday's this fall.
And some of that's probably because, I think especially defensively, they were able to retain, again, not everyone. Right? Like there are some big names defensively that moved on. Malik Blockton and the corners last year. Like there are some guys from last year's team that you'd love to Amaris. Like there are some guys you'd love to keep in the fold that are in college football playing somewhere else. A lot of the defensive players you would have wanted to keep are still on the team.
They're an awful lot, Adam. They're an awful lot. We were thinking about this earlier this week. Look at the young players on that defensive side of the ball that are heading just into their second, maybe their third year of college football.
Right. That was the thing that stuck out to me after the portal wrapped up was it was obviously you had 40 incoming guys, but in terms of what you had lost and what you didn't lose. Just, it's really easy to look at the offensive side of the ball and be like, man, Deuce Knight and Cam Coleman aren't here anymore. But then you looked at that defense and it was like, yeah, Xavier Atkins, All-American season going into his junior year, Elijah Melendez, Bryce Diaz, Blake Woodby. Let's see. I'm trying to think through them all now.
Eric Winters, new boy. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't even account for the defensive line because you've still got would need to
Jordan Crawford.
There is an 11 –
it feels like with sophomores, a lot of guys.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is the team, but like there's a starting 11 that features guys that were on last year's team. Like there's a version of the defense that would be pretty potent. I mean, I think that guys like Womack and some defensive linemen and potentially Andre Jordan, there are some guys who weren't on last year's team that could also very easily at Ziegler. I mean, there's some guys that could find their way into, into the fold too. But a lot of and that's pretty, like it's in contrast to an offense where, aside from Jeremiah Cobb, and that's almost it. Ty Buster could be one of your starting offensive linemen. You know, Cale Ellis could be in the
But let's face it. I mean, right now, I would say. there's probably only one offensive starter who I can say for sure was on last year's team.
You're right. And it's a bigger number on defense.
Oh, yes. Yeah, much
considerably
bigger.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's where – and, again, you wonder how much of that gets back to the decision to retain DJ Durkin, the decision to retain mm-hmm. Vontrell, and to have some continuity from last year and especially from last year's defense that would, you know, that would make it to where guys like Xavier and, you know, not only the players, like, because you've got the players that could have moved on and would have had a really healthy market based on what they'd already done, right? Like, your Xavier Atkins is a really, you know, is probably a better example, and then maybe guys like Sylvester Smith or Champ Anthony, Caleb Harris, mm-hmm. right? It's like, these are who I think people forget about Caleb Harris, by the way, that he's still like he's only played an insane amount of football in 2 years as a college football player, and it's like, and he's back too.
Hey, it was not nice to hear Alex Golish shout out to Joe Phillips.
Yeah,
when he was talking about his pass rushers first. I mean, he almost backtracked after he really spoke glowingly of Jared Smith, but mentioned Jared and Deshaun Womack, but the third guy he mentioned there on that outside was Joe Phillips.
Yeah, no, and that's a name we have not heard much about in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that was, I remember his commitment. That was a
big deal.
That was a
absolutely,
Georgia flip. That
absolutely was.
Yeah, that was significant. So yeah, I mean, if you can get some of those guys, you know, and a lot of them, you think more of the guys who are going into their sophomore year. Like, I mean, I think a Jared Smith would be one that you think about. But if you can get a Joseph Phillips type, like off and rolling and getting involved in this defense, that's significant, you know.
He was in a tough spot because he's behind Keldrick Falk too for a couple of years, right? Or he was in positions where, I mean,
yeah, and he was moving. He was also, yeah, he was moving. You know, he's moving positions, switching from being a linebacker. Moving outside.
Had some off the field turmoil as well, right? I mean, so like, was, I mean, was that, so there's, I mean, he's someone who, right, or like, is it, do I have that right? Or
maybe Barber? Am I thinking of Barber?
Okay, yeah,
good.
Okay, good. I know, you know, it was, but he, was it injuries?
It was the first year
he was injured. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. My mistake. Take that back. But he's someone who, like, again, I don't think it was, I mean, look, it could end up being that he's, you know, it's there's a disconnect between the prospect that he was suspected to be, you know, as a recruit and what he actually is. But like, I also think there are some logical explanations for why he hasn't gotten on the field and could break through in a third year or a fourth year too.
Yeah,
we've seen players like that.
I mean, I've talked about it. I've spent a good bit of time in the spring going over and watching the D line and the Buck edge guys, and he's a big, good looking athlete that can really move. So they've got a few of those guys. But it would be great. It'd be a great story because he's been here. He could have left, stuck around, and now, going through this spring has made an impression on Alex Golish.
What's the funniest thing you've heard Vontrell say during sled drills, being over there that much? Is there anything we can say on the radio? Or?
Yeah, I don't know. He is fun to watch. He is intense.
He's hilarious.
And
like, he's simultaneously intense and hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, he's showing him, and Coleman Hutzler is too. I mean, that's the whole staff. There is more. And I've talked to some former players about it, and yeah, I get the feeling this whole staff is more they're more into getting what they can out of their players and letting them know vocally than any staff that I can recall since maybe early Chiz's early staff.
Tuberville had some guys that would.
He talked to a coach. But that was since then. But it goes back. It goes back a few years, yep, till you've got a staff that gets after their guys. And maybe part of that is because there is no transfer portal here this spring. I mean, you know, Alex Golish addressed that week before last when we spoke to him about, yeah, you know, it is what it is as far as these guys are concerned, but I don't see him backing away or this staff backing away from coaching their players up and getting, you know, getting on them.
Right. I'm going to be really interested to see like the trade-off of not having that spring window, and it's like, okay, how many more guys do you have come along, you know, like a Joe Phillips type, mm-hmm, right? You know, it's just the fact that you're investing that much more time in these kids instead of saying, you know, you might want to go to the portal and look for something else. But no, it's that's going to be something I'm really intrigued to watch, because I don't think we're going to know what it looks like until it happens, but then you'll see it eventually, and it'll be like, okay, that's the benefit of this change, because that's one of those things where it happened, and I'm sure everybody gets a little bit of relief from not having that chaos of another portal window. But, like, I mean, gosh, to Dan's point earlier, Peyton Thorne, Keandre Lambert-Smith, Keyron Crawford, like, you know, there's still a chance to get some good gets with a second window, but, you know, you wonder if the time spent on that is now going to turn into, okay, you've got a couple guys who you would have told to go elsewhere finally turn in a corner.
I think you can ratchet up the intensity as a coach, too, when you feel like you've got a lot of competition in the room,
mm-hmm.
right? You can get on a guy and sort of, I mean, I've been struck by, I mean, yes,
the receivers.
And here's the thing with Vontrell, not that Vontrell hasn't been intense, but I noticed that, I mean, last year, like from the moment Vontrell got that job, I feel like he's been at full throttle.
Yeah.
The receivers and the tight ends and the way that Larry Scott is willing to take a flamethrower to one of his players if he drops a pass, the way Cody makes it clear in his ways that there are too many options out here for you to be making those kind of simple mistakes. And when I know Larry Scott has made this point too, is like, when it's Byron Brown throwing you the ball in these practices, like, the spotlight's on you. Mm-hmm. I'm watching you, your teammates are watching you, the other quarterbacks are watching you, Alex Golish is watching you. Like, it's a terrible time to drop a pass. And we've seen, yeah, we've seen the consequences of that a couple of times. And I was, you know, and one guy who I think has shown you both he's been on the receiving, he's been on the business end of that from Larry Scott. He's also made some really impressive plays, is Newsom. And so to hear Alex Golish talk about, like, this is a guy he knows can be really special, and they want to see him, you know, do the things he needs to do to make that jump from
Howard.
For Larry Scott.
Yeah, that's I think that's a great point, because at Howard, against the competition level you're playing, you probably can coast a little bit, or, you know, you can get down a little bit, and you're better than those guys.
Yeah.
But they believe that he's good enough to play here in the SEC, and if you're going to do that, then you don't need to have those times when you got your head down and, you know, you got your tail tucked between your legs and maybe you're not giving it the 100% or that the coaches are expecting every play.
Right, and that's a kid who just I forget what it was. I don't think he played much last year, and if I'm right, was a true freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's a redshirt freshman, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure I was straight on that. But, like, the fact that he's going from, you know, I think he was a Michigan commit as an edge rusher, and, like, you see him out there and he looks like an edge rusher, you know, and that's not necessarily in the things he does or the way he moves. It's more his build than anything, I would say. But if you can shape him up into a formidable, like, SEC tight end, that's going to be quite the project, you know, whether it's just this offseason alone or over the next couple of years. Like, I'll be fascinated to see his development.
Well, and the thought that your college head coach has come with you and he's now your position coach in the SEC, right? Like, that's got to be a wild, that's got to be a wild transition for both Larry Scott and for Xavier Newsom. But again, I thought that it seemed like Alex Golish was willing to name names yesterday and go into some detail in different positions about players that you didn't even have to. I mean, yeah, there were times when people would ask.
Yeah, not necessarily just the good.
No.
I mean, that's where we're talking about X.
Yeah. I mean, and he mentioned, I mean, I guess Jake Johnson would be one of the first names, you know, there at tight end. That's been the case all season long.
What did he say about him that was so funny?
He's got some jerk in him.
Got some jerk.
Nice guy who plays like a jerk on the field. Yeah.
And then he said something about his bald spot in his first spring availability, I think was that. Well, but no, and yeah, he's very, like, he came over and talked to us at one point during the spring and seems like a very pleasant
Jake,
kid.
He does.
Yeah.
Well, that's what, when you
Well,
talk...
I mean, look, I mean, it's not like he hadn't been around football his whole life.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Dad was a big-time quarterback, and brother pretty darn good, too.
And Auburn has signed a couple of guys with quarterback brothers, right, in the tight end room, right? I mean, Fromm was here a couple of years ago, and now you got a...
I expect a little more out of Jake. I really do.
I mean, Jake's someone who's got a track record as a starting tight end around the SEC.
Yeah, Jake had a pretty darn good game against Auburn in College Station a couple of years ago.
And I guess there's also the question of, like, how much does this offense want to throw to the tight end with these receiver options and with all the guys?
I think when your head coach is a tight end guy, that it's going to be more than we've seen.
I think that's a strong chance.
Yep. All right. I know we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We got plenty of time for you to join in, get your thoughts on anything going on in the world of sports here on the Wednesday Drive. Welcome back into the drive. 20 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Wednesday. Bill, Dan, Adam Cole from the Montgomery Advertiser. And, yesterday Auburn scrimmaged before we talked with Alex Golish. Auburn had a scrimmage, and I thought it was pretty interesting. Right as soon as Alex Golish came in, he talked about Gus Malzahn being there and being able to get as much info as possible as he could out of the former Auburn coach. I didn't realize that he and Christy were back in town. I mean, I'd seen them around, but yeah. I didn't know that they were like back.
And I would just assume, like, based on everything, just scuttlebutt conversation I've had since I've like moved here. Like, I would assume he's always had some sort of property at like Lake Martin something, but. You know, the fact that I guess they're full on living in Lee County now. Like, I think that's just, I got asked about this on a different radio hit yesterday, but like, that approach is, you can never go wrong with that approach of like, let me learn from as many people as humanly possible who have been here and walked this trail before. And I think to get it with Gus, like, I don't necessarily think about this, but I saw it in some of my, you know, like social media replies to the story or quotes or whatever of like, there were some people replying to me who felt like it was some like curse lifting thing based on how Gus got fired and things hadn't been the same since. And I don't know. I thought that part of it was kind of like, okay, I didn't really think about it like that, but you know, to have Gus Malzahn around, that's, you know, a lot better than a poke in the eye.
I mean, there's no question their paths crossed. Down in South Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he talked about that a little bit, I think. And you know, of course, you go back to whether it's, you know, I guess first it was Cody and Gus now. You know, all roads lead to Northwest Arkansas.
You're right. It's amazing. And Alex's wife
is
from there.
That might be the early prevailing theme of the Golish era. Just everything leads to Fort Smith, Arkansas. I think having him around is, you know, I mean, you add that to what Takiyo Spikes, Cam Newton, we've seen what he mentioned, Willie Anderson too. But yeah, just getting all the familiar faces around is I think that's always a good thing. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, there have been times in the past when coaches felt either threatened or I don't know what it was by former players or former coaches. And Alex Golish seems to just absolutely relish that.
Yeah, no, and that's I think that's especially for where Auburn is, and the fact that you haven't had a winning season or a not losing season, you know, in 5 years, like getting that sort of familiarity and the lived experience of having success here, like that's, I think that could, you know, I don't know that you'll ever see it in any sort of tangible way, but I think that's something that can go a really long way.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why a coach would sort of want, like, he wouldn't want it all to be all about the past, you know, for his program. He'd want some, you know, he'd want to focus on the future too. I think there's a way to involve important coaches and players from the past while also still keeping your focus on the future, and to have someone like Gus Malzahn, who Cody played for, like to have someone like that in town, willing to provide, you know, his thoughts, you know, willing to consult a little bit for Alex Golish. It's like, yeah, why not? You know, I mean, what drawback could there be? It's not like, I mean, you don't get the sense that Gus is trying to get his old job back, right? Or any, you know, has any sort of ulterior motive here. So, yeah, I think it would be it's cool that Alex Golish is open to the idea of using those resources of mining Gus Malzahn's immense football acumen for something that could maybe help him.
Yeah, and I think it also gives you an idea that he's pretty secure. He's pretty comfortable with where he is right now and the position that he has. So,
well, and Gus, and Gus is a guy who, like, I guess, you know, putting it back on like this year's team, it's like Gus is a guy who evaluated how do you get a team ready for the season when the quarterback's going to be doing a lot of stuff with his legs, and you don't want to, you don't want to put him in unnecessary jeopardy, and you want your team to be as ready as possible. That's something, and Alex Golish at least has the
he knows more about his guy than Gus did about the guys that he had that that exploded onto the scene with their ability to run the ball.
Yeah, a couple times in Gus's career, he had to sort of figure out on the fly a way to get everyone on board with Cam Newton's style of play and get Cam Newton familiar with all of his new teammates, and it worked out well enough.
Yeah,
I suppose in 2010, and then in 2013 he had to do it again. You know, as the new head coach, and you know, with Nick Marshall and a bunch of guys who'd never played with Nick Marshall before. So yeah, I think that he's uniquely
qualified.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who has unique experience at integrating a quarterback who is really going to use, you know, is going to use his athleticism a lot, and getting him to sort of seamlessly work with a brand new cast of characters.
And obviously, look, we haven't seen a game yet. I mean, there's still, you know, the skepticism, and rightfully so, from people wondering how's everything going to translate from the Group of Five to the SEC. But just how do you feel, Adam, about, you know, where Auburn is right now as we come toward the end of Alex Golish's first spring?
I think you're in a good place, and I don't necessarily, like you said, I mean, we have not seen a live game, and, you know, we'll come as close as we can until the season, you know, this coming weekend. But, like, I think just based on everything we've heard, I think you're in a pretty good place, because I think you've got a guy at the helm who understands what it takes to find that success regardless of the level, and you know, this is getting
he's been in the SEC.
He has been in the
SEC.
That's an important point to make, but it's also just it feels very process oriented with him. Mm-hmm. And that's what matters. I think a lot of those guys that got brought in from South Florida are guys who are going to be able and capable of competing in the SEC. But at the end of the day, like it boils down to the process of it all. And you know, the fine tuning of it, which, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier, but, like, you know, I think it's a fair concern, but at the same time, like, this, you know, this happens every year, and not identically, but you've got guys making a jump from G5 to the SEC level who succeed. You've got guys who make that same jump and sputter out and fail. But, you know, this is a guy who, like you said, has had that experience in the SEC, and just the amount of familiarity paired with the fine tuning and details of what seems like a very process oriented guy. Like, I think you're in a good place.
As detail oriented as Alex Golish is, and we're talking about being able to use the resource of Gus Malzahn, you've got on the other side of the ball, you've got three guys who were SEC defensive coordinators last year. Of course, DJ here at Auburn, but I mean, with Tim Banks and Coleman Hutzler, who were SEC defensive coordinators. I mean, I can't imagine being able to have much better resource when you're trying to determine where your offense is and how it's going to be able to hopefully be successful in this league.
Yeah, I actually went back and, like, crunched through this a while ago, but you have on this staff 81 years of, I listed it as, primary coordinator experience. So no, like, co-OC, co-DC, or that kind of stuff. And you've got one, two, you've got five guys who have had at least a decade of primary coordinator experience at the college level on this whole staff, like, wow, not just including the defense. So that's
and this isn't a graybeard staff, really.
No, right. Like, it's, and, you know, I think about a guy like Brad Wilson, who I don't, you know, I would imagine there are a lot of maybe Fairweather fans who would hear that name and think, who's that? But, you know, that was a guy who, I believe it was like a decade, was the defensive coordinator at Indiana State. And yeah, it's Indiana State, but still, that's a guy who has a decade of coordinator experience. You know, like the experience, the familiarity, like it just, that's those are the right sort of steps and mantras, I think, to build this sort of thing. And I think that's going to help you a ton on the defensive side of the ball.
All right, we probably should get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join us if you'd like as we head into the final segment of the Wednesday Drive.
Looking for a home service company you can truly trust. On The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment here on the Wednesday Drive. All right, you've got a lot to be covering this weekend, Adam. I mean, with the A-Day game, keeping up with Auburn baseball as they play down in Gainesville. It's a big series here. I mean, Auburn is just one win back of second place in the SEC in baseball.
Yeah, I think it's nine teams right now are either a game or below 500 in conference play.
I think they're like 12 teams within 2.5 games of themselves, from 9-5 to 7-8. I think they're 11 or 12 teams.
It's just a massive, it's a log jam, and it was funny. I asked Butch last night about, he said they're trying to make the messaging about the offense kind of a team focus, and I just asked him, I was like, you know, what does that look like? Is it, you know, doing a job as one part of the whole? And he starts talking about the continental divide.
It was
phenomenal. He goes, you know, I showed him a photo of the Continental Divide today, you know, all the way from, you know, north, south, whatever, and the way that, like, the rain and the water falls on the Rockies, and some of it goes this way and some of it goes that way. And he's like, our league is about to do that. But he's like, what I told these guys is I need us all going one way, regardless of how it goes. And, you know, I thought that was – He was a little more enthused.
That's about as eclectic as Bruce gets.
But I mean, I told him after, I was like, do you have a jersey? I was like, do you need a few pitches out of the bullpen or something? Because it was like, okay, I get where you're going with this, but yeah, and I mean, against a team like Florida that seems to have one great weekend and one bad weekend, like, you know, they just won a series against Georgia at Georgia, and based on the way things have been trending, you know, you might catch them on an off weekend, but naturally with the way things tend to go.
Well, that's the Southeast. That's the entire SEC.
Right, and it's just the parity of it all this year seems bigger than ever.
Quality parity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not mediocre parity.
You've got, like, yeah, and I mean, I guess with the exception of Missouri, and I don't know, South Carolina's, they're 5-10. I'll give them credit for that, you know, after the way they've looked the last year and change. Yeah. But, yeah, it's like those are the last two teams in the league. You know who's right above them? LSU.
Yeah,
and then Vanderbilt. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be a really interesting back half of league play, just across the board, and I think certainly with Auburn, for sure. You know, just only what, two series at home, and had your last home midweek last night.
Yep.
So, it's going to be a really interesting 5 weeks. But
you still get the feeling Auburn with this pitching can play with anyone.
Oh yeah.
But you've just seen too many games where the bats go radio silent, right? You would hope.
Yeah, you just hope that what we've seen the last, yes, you know, the last few ball games can continue. I mean, and it's something that it's not unusual in baseball just to see a team get hot as a unit. So I mean, that's what you hope. Of course, you want to really be clicking as you're winding things down, getting into the SEC tournament and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and you know, I think, like, that was even last night. It took them a second to break it open, but it was still, you had, okay, you got a couple guys on. It seemed like every inning until about the third, maybe it was when you started scoring, and that's kind of
one in the first, one in the third, and then the big fourth,
and that's what you want to see. If you're not linking it up, you want to see, okay, we're getting contact, we're getting guys on, and that's, you know, again, like, that has felt like the formula for Auburn when it's succeeding the last few years. So we'll see if they can keep it rolling.
All right, again, busy week with A-Day coming up. Let everybody know how they can keep up with all the work that you're doing, Adam.
Absolutely. If you're going straight to the source, just head to MontgomeryAdvertiser.com and click on that sports drop-down and click on the word Auburn, and you're going to have everything you need. And if you're looking for me, just search at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter on TikTok, Twitter, wherever on social media, and you'll find me wherever you're looking for me.
All right. Adam, thanks a lot. Always great to have you in.
Awesome.
We are out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. Ferg coming in tomorrow?
Should be.
All right, looking forward to it. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. But our thanks to Jason Caldwell and Adam Cole, being with us here on the Wednesday Drive. That's going to do it for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.